This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and the Hurt Locker will be one of the heavyweights on Oscar night.
25
meters, roger that.
Sanborn, butcher shop, 2 o'clock, dude has a phone.
Why is Eldridge running? Come on, guys, talk to me.
Drop the phone!
Hey, Brown!
I can't get a shot!
Nine Academy Award nominations include some of the biggies: Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director, and just about anybody who's ever forked over $10 at the box office feels qualified to voice an opinion on those. But what about sound editing and sound mixing? What's good and what isn't? How can you tell? Today we're going to shine the Talk of the Nation spotlight on some of the unsung Oscar categories. We want to hear from you. Do you root for best set design, makeup, costumes, and why? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, the role of bystanders in sexual assaults on campus. But first, Murray Horowitz, our favorite film buff, joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Murray, nice always to have you.
As always, Neil. Thanks for having me.
And a lot of people think, you know, those other awards just come along in the draft of some big picture.
Not always. And in fact, very often the Academy members use a category like this to honor a film that they can't honor otherwise, because it's just up against too many heavy hitters for the big categories.
So a film that gets overlooked for Best Picture, Star Trek, could win for Best Sound Editing?
Exactly. Right. That sort of thing. Or Best Makeup, you know. And because the nominations come from the craft members themselves, so in other words, in sound editing and sound mixing, the people in the sound branch of the Academy make the nominations. Everybody in the Academy can vote, though. So,
oh, I see. Vote for the final.
For the final one. And it's important to remember, because of the number of nominees being individuals, the actors are by far the largest quotient of the voting public, or private, whatever they are.
So if somebody made me up to look like, you know, a really gross alien, I might not vote for them next time around.
There is such an easy joke there, but I won't make it. that's right. And I'm glad that you are shining the Talk of the Nation spotlight on this, because, you know, very often people make light of these categories. I remember, actually, somebody reminded me that a few years ago, Mike Myers was presenting the awards in sound editing and sound mixing, and he said something like, well, now the awards everybody's been waiting for. And of course, that's not why most people tune in, but it was very disrespectful to these artists. I mean, these are people who really are creative people and work in the collaborative process to make the film great. And you shouldn't make light of them.
Have these categories always been around?
They have in some way or another. Now, obviously, when the Oscars started, there was no sound. So there were no sound Oscars.
Well, weren't the first Oscars 1931?
No, 1928.
28, okay. 1927.
The first Best Picture was Wings, which was a silent.
Okay.
And don't forget, for a number of years, because theaters weren't fitted out with sound rigs, they would shoot pictures in both silent and sound versions.
Uh-huh.
But
2D and 3D.
Right. Exactly. And for many years in these design categories like costumes, art direction, there were black and white and color categories. I misspoke. They haven't been around forever. Makeup started, I think, in 1981 or 82, largely as a protest. The Elephant Man had been done, and there was no award for makeup, and so the Academy finally decided that they should have a makeup award. There had been special prizes for makeup before, but art direction started out, interestingly enough, as interior decoration in the old days.
Interesting.
Costumes have been around since the late 40s, and art direction forever, sound mixing and sound editing used to be one Oscar for Best Sound,
mm-hmm.
and then it got split up later
into those two categories. And let me ask, with digital advances, how do you tell the difference a lot of the time between great makeup or great CGI?
It's a great question, and the rules are very, very specific in makeup, for example. I mean, this is really for people who work with paint and powder and prosthetics and masks and wigs. It does not cover digitally generated imagery in any way. And in fact, the rules say, literally, I'm reading from them now, makeup is any change in the appearance of a performer's face, hair, or body created by the application of cosmetics, three-dimensional materials, prosthetic appliances, or wigs and hair pieces applied directly to the performer's face or body.
Not pixels, in other
right,
words.
Exactly. Okay. So.
Well, let's bring a guest into the conversation, an Oscar nominee himself, Wiley Stateman, nominated for an Oscar in sound editing for Inglourious Basterds. He joins us now from the line at Sony Studios in Culver City, where he's currently working on Ridley Scott's Robin Hood. Nice to have you with us today. Congratulations on the nomination.
Well, thank you, Neil. Thank you, Murray. Thanks for having me join you in this conversation.
Well, I'd like to ask you, how do we tell what makes good sound editing? And I want you to listen here to a scene from, you obviously did, from Inglourious Basterds. In this clip, Brad Pitt and his squad of Jewish American soldiers, the Bastards, fight their way into a prison to liberate a fellow Nazi killer.
Lieutenant Aldo Rain, these are the Bastards. Ever heard of us? We just want to say we're a big fan of your work when it comes to killing Nazis. I think you show great talent, and I pride myself in having an eye for that kind of talent. Your status as a Nazi killer is still amateur. We all come here to see if you want to go pro.
So one of the recruiting scenes for the Inglourious Basterds. Can you tell us a little bit about what was involved in that scene?
Yeah, well, Brad Pitt's mission is really to sort of gather an ensemble of bastards whose job it is to seek revenge and to basically wreak havoc against the Germans. And so he arrives at this prison to spring Hugo Stiglitz. And it's a scene that's really inserted for story and for character development. And it doesn't necessarily play in continuity with the rest of the film, but it allows, you know, for Quentin to sort of gather his team for the final mission, which is the third act of the film.
Yeah, you call him Quentin. I call him Mr. Tarantino.
Oh, really? We call him QT, actually.
Oh.
And he's, you know, he's a very endearing character to all of his creative team, and he's a wonderful craftsperson in his own right. And
well, what makes good sound editing? How can we tell?
Well, I think the way to really describe it and maybe differentiate it from the best sound category, which is typically given to the recording engineers, is to say that the supervising sound editor is kind of like an architect would be to a construction project. He's a person tasked with the responsibility of design and of layout and of describing the various sound effects that are necessary in order to produce believability or to produce rhythm and momentum in the scene. And so I consider the supervising sound editor role is really an architectural role, and the mixing role, which is the other category given at Oscar time, is an engineering role where mm-hmm. they're physically setting the levels of sounds and placing the sounds in the theater and combining the dialogue with the music and the sound effects and setting those relationships. So the supervising sound editor is kind of like an architect developing original material, pulling from library sources, and also working very closely with the film editor, in our case it was Sally Mankey, and Quentin, and, you know, developing, you know, overall story arc and story concepts and individual sound effects.
Well, I'm going to do something unfair. I want to listen to a little bit of a clip from one of your competitors for the award this year, and this is, of course, Avatar. This is a scene where the Blue Lady takes Jake up to meet the dragon he's going to fly on later in the film, and it gets all very exciting. Very little dialogue, but a lot of special effects.
Do not look in her eyes.
And timing all that stuff, figuring out what sound you're going to use where when you're creating these sounds, that's all involved here?
Yeah, and I think, Neil, it's a lot more than just timing. At a certain point, when you're working on a project like Avatar, and you've got Pandora, which is this fantasy planet with floating island, you know, landmass, you're really tasked to sort of ground all of that into something that would be believable on one hand, recognizable on one hand, but also that sort of helps the audience take the leap into the fantasy world. Mm-hmm. And so a scene like you just played has creature voices that are derived from all different source materials of real animals and possibly even actor vocals and various things. And I think the challenge, you know, in that film was, you know, they created a language, they created a planet, and all of that material had to be sourced from
something.
From fantasy.
Yeah. Well, let's get another caller into the conversation. Michael joins us on the line. Michael with us from San Rafael.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
So, I'm Hi, Wiley. I'm a Foley artist. I'm actually working at Skywalker Ranch right now.
Okay.
But anyway, I was calling up sound editing, sound mixing. All of those are really important categories. If you took all of those away, it would be really hard to watch the movie just standing on dialogue alone.
So, Michael, you root for the sound? You wait for the sound categories?
Who am I rooting for? I'm rooting for Avatar because I'm working right now with some of the people who worked on it, and they're my buds.
Okay, but it's a personal thing.
It's a personal thing, but I love the movie. But Inglourious Basterds, both of them are fantastic.
Oh, because you might be working for Wiley one of these days.
Michael.
Wiley, I hope so. I'm over at Universal, but right now it's Skywalker.
Michael brings up a good point, though, that I want to ask you, Wiley, because he said he roots for his buds. And my question is, what do you think about everybody in the Academy voting on a category that's very technical and very precise?
Well, I think, you know, it's reasonable enough. You know, after all, it's the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science, and it's largely populated by actors, but it's almost, you know, equally populated by craftspeople, of which I think actors would consider themselves as well. But
some actors.
I think when you talk about, you know, having personal vested interest in one particular project or another, I think that's human nature. The other aspect of it is that we are artists and we are creative people, and we're always looking to explore the fringes of our given areas. And each of us, and Foley is a wonderful opportunity to explore as well, so my hat's off to you. But each of us tend to focus on our particular area, but it's we live in very small communities.
Wiley, we got to take a break, so that's the radio craftsmanship here. We're going to be back with more on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In the run-up to the Oscars, this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with our movie pal Murray Horowitz about the Academy Awards. Not the Best Picture or Leading Actor categories. They're overrated. We're talking about the good stuff. Sound mixers, cinematographers, makeup artists, and the documentaries. We've talked about all five nominees over the past few weeks. Do you root for Best Set Design, Makeup, Costumes at Y800-989-8255? Email us, talk@npr.org. In a few minutes, we're going to talk with an Oscar-winning director about what it takes to make an Oscar-winning Best Documentary Feature. We're talking with Wiley Stateman right now. He's nominated for an Oscar this year in sound editing for Inglourious Basterds. He's currently working on Ridley Scott's latest, Robin Hood. And let's get another caller on the line. This is April. April calling us from San Antonio.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, April. Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, I'm calling from just a viewer's perspective. You know, your last caller was talking about technical refinements like engineers, voting for engineers. But, you know, from a viewer's point, like with the Hurt Locker, that the sound that the character made while he was in his uniform or in his...
Oh, in that big suit.
The bomb suit.
Yes, yeah, in his bomb suit. You know, that to me was, you know, an integral part of the character.
Indeed. Wiley, I'm sure you saw the picture, and did you admire that?
I did, Neil, and I saw the picture twice, and I would have seen it a second time right after I saw it the first time. I enjoyed it that much. But, you know, that's a great example. The suspense in that film is really derived from the proximity to sound. So there are times when you're cocooned in that suit that he's wearing, and some event is occurring, and it's too close. And
yeah.
The sound of that event really is a very, very important contributor to the anxiety and the suspense.
And also silence. I mean, one of the, like a good composer, a good sound editor has to use, and in that movie they use silence very well to build suspense.
That scene where they walk off into the dark.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. April, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
And Wiley, we're going to let you get back to work, but I do have to ask, how much of a difference, a professional difference, does it make if you win an Oscar for best sound editing? Are you more or less guaranteed to be working the next 5-10 years?
You know, I think, Neil, it's not really so much about that. I think that working in this business is really it's a labor of love, which is often described that. And as long as you feel that love for the process, then there are jobs and there are projects and there are people that that want you on the team.
Wiley Statesman, a statement. Thank you very much, and good luck.
Good luck, Wiley.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Murray. Thank you, Neil.
Wiley Statesman nominated for an Oscar this year in sound editing for Inglourious Basterds, and he's currently working on Ridley Scott's latest, which is Robin Hood. Indeed, called us from the studio there.
You know, one of the things that I think ought to be said before we leave the sound categories altogether, and this also has to do with the actual recording, that is, sound mixers, take the lobby, and the theater scene, the end, the climax and end of Inglourious Basterds. There is so much going on. You have dialogue coming from a movie that they're all watching in the theater. You have people screaming. You have sound effects. You have music. You just, all of this is going on, and sorting that out, and as Wiley said, making sense of it for the viewer is an enormous job. It's a creative job, and my hat's off to him.
And think about the sound editing involved in a film, an animated picture, like Up, where all of the dialogue is set to mouths that are moving.
Yep.
Just listen to this clip and think about it.
Guess what that one was?
Annoying?
No, the puma. I know all kinds of calls. Bob White?
What was that one? That actually sounded pretty good.
Edward Asner as the grouch in Up. And it's, you know, it's that's also a good example of something we didn't talk too much about, which is the sound mixing Oscar, because all those things are, of course, recorded in a studio or on a soundstage. So all that, what's called looping, and all that ADR, additional dialogue recording, that's the job of the sound mixers, and they do a great job in that film.
Well, as much as we're interested in audio here on National Public Radio, costume.
Yeah. Here, there's a kind of unified field theory, if you will, certainly between costumes and makeup, and even costumes, makeup, and art direction. And that's, after all, along with the people, the actors, everything that you see in the movie. And there's a kind of tension, Neil, when I say it's a unified field theory, in that the voters tend to, you'll see, for example, in costume and makeup, there are always a lot of period pictures, right, in art direction, a lot of period. You know, this year, you know, the Young Victoria and Bright Star and things like that. And the reason is that that those often win is that voters tend to look for pleasing and beautiful. One art director told me, he said, you know, it does tend to become a beauty contest. A costume designer told me, she said, I said, what do voters look for in costumes? He said, they look for anything they can't buy at the store. So something that period pieces tend to get votes, something that's important design that calls attention to itself, tends to get the votes. But that's not necessarily the goal of good design. Goal of good design is to bring the realized version of the movie to the public.
Here's a tweet we got from Lisa J. Rose. Do you root for unsung categories? Yes, because I work in that industry. People like me are what make and break films that win. We starve most of the time. Oscar equals a job and security.
Yep,
that's
true.
Get a caller on. This is Jill. Jill with us from Ann Arbor.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Costumes, set design, that type of thing, period pieces. For me, just coming from the arts background that I come from, the accuracy of the past with the twist of the 21st century, that's what I look for, something
that brings the past alive for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's it, Neil.
And I wonder, Murray, period pieces must have a huge advantage in the costume category.
Well, they do. And the reason they have an advantage, I actually talked to a costume designer, as I mentioned, and I said, okay, I can understand why voters who are not costume designers are impressed by that gorgeous gown in the 19th century waltz scene. You
right.
know? But why do the costume designers themselves nominate so many period pictures? And she said, you know why? Because the truth is, any costume designer would kill to design a period picture. So clearly something that's impressive. I mean, period design is good. And accuracy, I'm glad Jill mentioned. Accuracy is very important. In best makeup, it'll be really interesting to see, where there are only three nominees, who wins this year, because one of the nominees, Young Victoria, takes place at a time when, unlike the 18th century, makeup was not in fashion. Mm-hmm. Nobody used paint and powder. You didn't. So now the makeup artists in the Young Victoria have to make up often very beautiful women in ways that makes it look like they're not wearing makeup.
Let's go next to Steve. Steve with us from Cleveland.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So I live in Cleveland originally. I'm from Cleveland, but I my permanent residence right now is New York City, and I've been acting in films and independent short features for about 2 years now. And I would say that one of the most important parts of costume as an award is how it affects the performance. From an actor's perspective, I really don't feel as much like the character until I see myself in the mirror in the costume. When you get into that mode and you start to really want to create a person and create something, you can't just do it, you know, in a t-shirt and shorts. You look in the mirror, and when you start to see the character you've created visually for yourself, you start to realize who that is. And you really...
The snappy patter comes a little quicker when you can snap the brim of your fedora.
It's true.
Exactly. And it's so integral to so many things. It really creates a new world. I can't imagine, you know, to reference a movie that's, you know, upcoming is the Alice in Wonderland feature with Tim Burton. And, you know, I can't imagine having to do that role without the fantastic costume design that allows you to get into that sort of, you know, strange, otherworldly feeling. Hmm. And I think it's really important because we all watch the acting awards and we all care about who the actors are. But the reality is they wouldn't be as capable of doing what they do without being able to feel like that character. And the costume design is extremely integral to that.
Right? I got a question for you, Steve, about that. I talked to one costume designer who's done a lot of independent features, Mimi Maxman in New York, and she gave me the greatest concise definition. She said, good design is character definition through costume. And she said, it's not to just look good on the actor. It's got to help the actor. My question to you is, American actors are known for kind of internalizing and building the character from within, whereas, say, British actors start from the outside in. Which do you do? I mean, is the costume more important than building the inner life of the character?
I think that if you really internalize the character too much, and I studied in British technique acting. I will admit I studied with a coach from Old Vic in Bristol, and so I'm very British technique. But I will say that my feeling is that if you internalize the character too much, you start to let your own personal biases wear off on that character, and they become less authentic.
And a good costume can save you.
Internalizing it, like with costume or with the sound of the language, is more important because it allows you to really assume the role of someone else without it interrupting, you know, who you are, or without who you are interrupting the character.
So a good costume can actually save an actor from herself or himself.
Oh, absolutely.
Great, thanks.
Seen before, for sure.
Steve, thanks very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Email question from Michael in Tucson. Why is there no award for best stuntman or stuntwoman?
It's a good question, and it's been brought up before. There are some famous stunt movies. I'm thinking right off the top of my head if it's a mad world. The answer is I don't know. For many, many years, people were saying, well, for goodness sake, why isn't there an Oscar for best costume? And there wasn't for the first 20 years of the Oscar, so maybe one day. Some Oscar categories have come and gone.
Over the past month, we've been talking with the creators and some of the featured players in this year's Oscar-nominated documentary features.
In a way, we're not producing chickens. We're producing food. It's all highly mechanized. So all the birds coming off those farms have to be almost exactly the same size.
The Democratic Voice of Burma, or DVB, uses satellite TV and shortwave radio to send news of the protests around the world.
That's a dolphin's worst nightmare, right there. Hundreds of thousands of dolphins have died there.
Here's a 6-year-old kid, doesn't know anything about life. His parents place him in the hands of some person they don't even know. some person that will get drunk, use drugs, smuggles dope. They shouldn't be surprised if their kid never makes it.
Very soon, you'll come to think that everyone else is foolish. What would this expert be telling me if he knew what I knew? So in the end, you stop listening to them.
Food, Inc., Burma Vijay, The Cove, Which Way Home, and The Most Dangerous Man in America. Today we wrap up our series with a look at what makes an Oscar-worthy documentary, and we turn to Lynn Littman, an Oscar-winning documentary filmmaker herself, now a member of the Board of Governors with the Academy on the documentary branch, with us today from our studios at NPR West in Culver City. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
And what makes an Oscar-winning documentary?
Oh, it's as subjective as what color blouse I want to wear today. It really is a subjective thing for me. I actually place a pretty heavy burden on a filmmaker, on a documentary filmmaker. I want to feel different about the world when I leave the theater or finish watching a doc, hopefully when I leave the theater, than I did walking in. I think that documentaries get made on passion, and I'm ready to be convinced of something when I walk in, and hopefully I'm when I leave.
We're talking about the other Oscars you'll see on Sunday night. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Lynn Littman, as you look at these films, is it work the same way Murray was telling us for the other categories, that only the documentarians choose the category, but then everybody votes?
It actually does. It's not quite everybody votes. Everybody who gets to see the films vote. The docs go through three rounds of voting. The first round is by the – there's a documentary branch, finally. It's only about 10 years old, which was incredibly important and terrific that it got put into place by the Academy, because it really is a field that deserves the expertise of peer of mm-hmm. colleagues. The first round is all voluntary, because we owe the Academy, because they gave us a branch. It's a real effort to get as many people out to vote as they can or see the films. And then the first round is down to 12 to 15 films. Then there's a second round again of another round of volunteer viewers that takes it down to the five. And then the five nominees, that is. And then people have to actually come to the theater and prove that they've seen all five films before they can vote mm-hmm. on the winner. And that's, I've always felt, the fairest of all the branches in the Academy. It's sort of the simplest and clearest and most honest way to do it. You have to have seen the films.
That's also true of the best foreign picture as well.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And that takes hours and hours. I did that this year.
And is it an anomaly this year? But all of these could be characterized as cause pictures, and very largely liberal cause pictures.
Well, I don't know why more conservative people don't get out and make films. Maybe they're stuck on Rush Limbaugh's radio show. It would be interesting. I don't know why that happens. I don't know if they're liberal cause. They're causes that have to do with justice in many cases.
Well, Burma Vijay certainly covers both sides of the political spectrum.
It does, and it certainly whoever puts his life at risk by filming is neither liberal nor conservative. He's brave, yes. Or she.
Somebody's calling to tell you you're on the radio.
They're
My
listening
God.
To you.
I'm sorry.
But I have a question, Lynn, which is with the people who are, I guess, not working at the time, you know, doing the nominating. I mean, people have to get there to see them, and I think you're right. That's a good requirement. This was a kind of a scandal in the foreign picture category years ago, because they figured a lot of people thought the only people had time to see all these movies that they then had to nominate, and there was like, you know, 30-some movies, were people who weren't working, who were older, and as a result, justice wasn't done. Not always were the best pictures nominated. Do you think the best documentaries are generally nominated year after year?
I think I actually think so, because, first of all, documentary filmmakers, as most filmmakers, work on irregular schedules, so that you are available at for chunks of time. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is we know each other's work. We see it at different in different venues at different kinds of screenings. And the myth of the in the documentary branch, certainly, the myth of the fact that this is not a jury of one's peers is a myth.
Yeah. We just have a few seconds left. I'm sorry to cut you
sure,
off there,
sure,
but
sure.
I wanted to ask if you have a favorite amongst this year's nominees. The voting's over, so nobody can pay attention to what you say.
Well, I can't name favorites. Actually, my favorites didn't get nominated.
Really?
How's that for democracy?
So maybe justice hasn't been done.
Well, I have to say.
Oh, well.
I saw all five. I'd have to say it's between Burma Vijay and The Cove.
Oh, really?
Good luck to them all.
Good luck to them all. And we thank their directors and producers. Somebody else calling to say you're on the radio.
Not me.
Not you this time. We thank them all for making themselves available. And Lynn Littman, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Lynn
Bye-bye.
Littman, an Oscar-winning documentarian, and she serves on the Board of Governors representing the documentary branch of the Academy. With us from NPR West, Murray, as always, thanks very much.
Always a pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
Our movie pal, Murray Horowitz, here in Studio 3A.